Hi, this is Tom Uren, author of the Seriously Risky Business newsletter, and I'm here today with the Gruck.
Hiya.
First of all, I'd like to thank the Cyber Initiative at the Hewlett Foundation and also founding corporate sponsors Proofpoint for their support. Today, we thought we'd talk about why Europe is so bad at military cyber operations. So, first of all, to be clear, I'm thinking of the bigger European countries, right? So it totally makes sense for smaller countries to not have much capacity. Although you can construct scenarios where a smaller country may go, well, we're not going to be conventionally powerful, so therefore we should invest extra in cyber capabilities. I've not heard that that's happening, but that's like plausible.
Right.
So I'm thinking countries like Germany, France.
Right.
I think the UK is a bit of a special case, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're also, to be clear, talking about the military capabilities, integrating cyber operations into military actions, and we're saying they're terrible at that.
And asking
the question why, perhaps, is the point.
Yes, they're not good at it, and why are they not good at it is the question.
To me, the logical first question is, why do we even think it's bad? My impression is that there's a consensus among people in the kind of field that thinks about this that it is bad, but why do you not disagree?
Yeah, so I think one of the indicators that it's not great is that we've seen a lot of articles sort of over the years of, you know, the Dutch are building, you know, a 3,000-person cybercom, and the Germans are creating, you know, 8,000 cyber soldier roles, and the British have set up a new thing for 3,000 cyber soldiers to, you know, cyber and on and on. And that's about it. Like, you certainly never hear of them actually doing operations. But then, you know, I've heard other things, like basically the way that you get to 8,000 cyber soldiers is you take everyone that does anything computer related and you just relabel them cyber. So you take all your network admins and your system admins and, you know, the guys doing patches and all that stuff, and you just say he used to be like a network specialist and now he's a cyber offensive or a cyber defense network specialist. Boom, you know, suddenly
cyber warrior.
Right. And so that sort of trickery works for a press release, but it doesn't necessarily work on these cyber battlefields in the cyber trenches.
Yeah. Certainly in Australia, they've talked occasionally about offensive operations, that is, operations designed to degrade, deny, disrupt. And the reason they do that is to try and set norms of what's acceptable behavior. So Australia will say, we did this particular thing in this particular case, and these are the reasons that it follows international humanitarian law. And I'm sure that the US also talks about operations for the same reason. And I'm pretty sure the UK has done so at times as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of, to me, implies that if you're doing operations, there's a good reason to talk about them, because you want to shape the way the use of cyber capabilities is going to develop. And I guess the flip side of that is, if you're not talking about it, presumably, is that because you're not doing it, or because why would you not talk about it, I guess is the question. And that sort of makes me think that Europe is not doing a whole lot there.
Right. So I'd counter that not talking about it by just saying 8,200. So Israel's military cyber force is 8,200. Unit 8,200 does not speak a lot about what they're doing. As far as I know, they don't. However, there's no one I can think of who would say that they are like underachievers who don't do anything, right? That even though they're not talking, there's no question that they are an effective operating force.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that if you're talking about it, you're doing it. And if you're not talking about it, but doing it, there's still something that happens. Like, I'm not sure what all the things are, but, you know, every now and then they get caught, or every now and then operations happen. There's a clear indication that there's something happening there.
So I've never heard anything about Europe achieving anything in the cyber domain. I do believe that they're probably good at cyber espionage.
Yeah.
Or at least some countries.
If they are completely unable to do any cyber espionage, I think we would know about it, just because they would get wrecked so hard all the time. Like, I think they have to have some level of capability at some thing, you know? Like, I get the sense that they're not completely useless in that domain. They're doing something. I don't know how much. I don't know how many, you know, if they've got a 10,000-man team or a 10-man team. I have no idea. But it seems to be fine. That does not carry over to their, you know, military official cyber capacity, I think. So any competence that they have on the espionage side seems to be isolated to the espionage side. So I'll be upfront. I do not have an answer. I can think of a bunch of different interesting things that come up. Germany in particular, I think there's a cultural issue. So if you look at, you know, like CCC or, you know, any of the, like any of the hacker...
That's the Chaos Computer Club, is that right?
Yeah, so if you look at the Chaos Computer Club, or basically just any of the hacker communities that are public and stuff, they are very anti-government, like rabidly so. And it, you know, that's fine. That's their cultural thing. I'm not saying it's wrong. I do think it has an impact on when the military needs to staff up. They can't go out and recruit people with known talents and skills because culturally that's just not viable. On a slightly different tangent from this, the German public is super cautious about the military.
Yeah, so I think the Germans in particular had a very strong reaction to the Snowden leaks. Mm-hmm. And I think that can bleed over into a distrust of anything that's got the word cyber or is kind of associated with it. As
yeah.
Well, I mean, it does have many uses, right? So it can be used for domestic surveillance. It can be used for lawful espionage. It can be used for military purposes. So I think if you get all those things conflated, I can see how you could be
right
cautious and it seems that that's a German cultural heritage there.
Yeah, and I think that's true. I think that they are rightfully hesitant about a government with a lot of power, particularly a sort of a military power, and so they understandably just might be completely against that sort of thing. France, I haven't heard anything, like I haven't felt that. Like I've spoken with, you know, a lot of French hackers and stuff, and I've never gotten the screw the government
mm-hmm.
sort of vibe that you get from the Germans. But I've also never heard anything about French military cyber. Like I have never had anyone say, you know, like, just between you and me, I got to tell you, some of the stuff they've done is really impressive. And I would expect to hear that. That's what I hear sort of in general about people who are competent. When I make fun of Cybercom, I will have people who take me aside and be like, it's not all bad, you know, some of the...
So, and, yeah, I guess that's that unpublished hearsay right. that gives you an idea of what is actually going on. One thing I was wondering is whether they have actual opportunities to use those types of skills. So the examples that Australia and the US have talked about have both been against ISIS. And in terms of demonstrating capability and trying to tell a story about how you're doing it, and I'll use air quotes, properly or responsibly, that's the perfect target because it's not a peer competitor. You can absolutely afford to take your time and get your legal ducks lined up in a row, because especially when it's in Syria or overseas, you know, there's no or relatively little sort of really pressing urgency.
Right. You know, the one argument I'd make to that is I think that's ISIS is a very poor target for cyber.
That, yeah. So perhaps they were sort of searching to find, where can we use it?
the Venn diagram of anyone who uses a computer and someone we're allowed to hack, and it just barely touched with ISIS. Yeah, I think it's a topic we've covered, actually, is unleashing the hounds of war against cyber criminals, you know, and how that is a valid use of country cyber, and it allows you to sort of keep them sharp.
Yeah.
You know, it's an opportunity to go out and actually do real operations against real targets and have, you know, real experience, but without starting World War III by accident. So I haven't heard that they've done it, and I think that might be one of the problems, is that they need to say, we are now going to include going after, international cyber-criminal terrorist-type threats as a thing that we do, you know, all of that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we did have that whole talk about why it's a good idea. And to me, it's a very valid idea, but depending upon the country's legal regime, it may not be lawful. And I was wondering if perhaps in Europe that may be a problem for them.
That's true. I hadn't considered that. Without, see, to me, if it's a legal problem, then that's nothing that can't be solved by the people in charge. You know, you just change the law.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I guess these podcasts are undoubtedly going to get people thinking about the issue.
Right.
We listen to it in all the right places.
There you go. So I think one of the things that we haven't mentioned yet is also there seems to be this real deep European-wide cultural suspicion of cyber surveillance. You know, you're looking at how strongly they react against Pegasus and these other things. And it's understandable that abuse or misuse would be cause for alarm, but I do kind of feel like some of the cases that they've gone after have not been those things. It's been stuff that at least I would consider just normal espionage, like Pegasus was found on the phone of like a member of parliament. It's like, oh, a politician? Like, when did we allow politicians to be targets for espionage? This is outrageous, you know? Like, come on.
Yeah, I think there's several different things going on there. One of the problems is that some of the countries appear to have been using Pegasus against their own politicians. Not the countries, but the ruling party.
Right.
And, you know, on one level, that's a...
No, that's a foul.
Why do I care what another country is doing to its own politicians? On another level, it's that's bad for democracy, which I think in the European Union is probably like a valid concern and it's probably worth doing something about. And then on a third level, it's like, well, the sale of those kinds of capabilities is bad for some sort of proliferation reason. So those are the reasons I think. But I do agree that there's a really strong reaction to it.
I think it's tied up with the Snowden reaction. You know, it's very much like we super hate this and here's a thing that's related to it. So we also super hate this thing.
Yeah.
The transitive property of dislike of cyber.
Yeah.
The thing is, from speaking with Max and reading...
So you're talking about Max Meets?
Yeah, and so in speaking with Max and skimming his book, No Shortcuts, Why States Struggle to Develop a...
It's No Shortcuts, so of course you have to skim it.
I read the table of contents. It's, you know, I got the gist. So, yeah, I think one of the things that he was talking about is that the reason that people create a cyber force is not that they, it's not the same reason that you get a tank, because you get a tank because the other guy has got machine guns and you don't want your dudes to get shot. So you want something that can protect them. So you get a tank. Cyber forces are not they're not developed because of capabilities of the opposition or the expected opposition. They are developed because your neighbors and peers have one. And when they're developed, the other interesting thing is that they closely resemble whoever is like culturally closest to you.
Right.
So, you know, like I think that the Dutch have one, and so the German one is basically modeled very heavily on like, what are the Dutch doing? I mean, we've got to be better than them, right? So we can do that. And I think that, you know, if you look at the cybercom equivalent that the UK is trying to build, I bet you that they're trying to model it on the US cybercom, but not exactly. Like, it's similar to, so they're trying to do that.
Yeah. You can't take it exactly. You've got to improve it.
Right. Yeah, like they've got the right idea, but they failed to do X, you know?
he was telling me, I don't know if maybe it was earlier, that Max said that you're much more likely to have a cyber command if your peers have a cyber command.
Yeah, it was one of the things I got out of skimming his book. I don't know if...
to me, that's a really worrying point.
Right. The takeaway was that it was a lot more of a... France has got 200 tanks, so Germany needs to have 210. Not like Russia's got 2,000, therefore, collectively, we need to have 2,500. It wasn't that sort of motivation. It was very much like, well, if they're going to have one, we need to have one as well. So we're not going to be embarrassed.
Was Max's book talking particularly about Europe?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
He covers some other stuff, but Europe's the focus, the nexus.
Yeah, so if that's a motivation, that's to me very worrying, because what missions do you have to satisfy? And I think if you're doing it because someone else is doing it, you just don't know what to do, and you don't have any way to kind of learn even.
Right, it's exactly the wrong motivation. I mean, you need to be, like, you need to go in and say, here is a domain that we want to dominate. Here's the, you know, the doctrine that we want to have, I don't know, supremacy or dominance or, you know.
Well, you've got to want to achieve something, right? Yeah.
Yeah, like, we're going to do this. Here's a doctrine outline that we've developed. Here's the sort of force structure that we want to have that will allow us to do that. Let's go out, let's staff, let's see how we can get training and integrate with existing capabilities, et cetera, et cetera. Here's how we can keep ourselves sharp. Here's the mission that we're going to be on. Here's the remit. If you do that, then, you know, I think that there's a reasonable chance that you'll end up with something functional. But if you go, they've got 5,000 cyber soldiers, well, we're going to have 8,000 cyber soldiers, which is better than 5. That's not going to get you anywhere. I think fundamentally, even measuring your cyber force by headcount is the wrong approach.
Yeah. To me, it makes sense to start with your SIGINT organization, have them do espionage, and then gradually branch out into having a structure that allows you to do offensive cyber things as well.
Yeah.
And just because the overlap in skills is so great, and plus also you want to be able to manage that tension in missions. So do you know whether those types of military groups are formed out of their SIGINT groups, or are they being generated new out of, what's the phrase, whole cloth? Or
right. My understanding is that the UK one, they're trying to have their cake and eat it too, so they want GCHQ people to come and help staff alongside military people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the stationing it so far away is going to be a problem. Like, I very much wonder, can you take the best people out of the environment that works for them, split them apart from the groups that have been helping them succeed, put them somewhere else far away, and surround them with people who are sort of new and get the same results? In my opinion, better off having something next door.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
Right. And so I think that the Germans are doing it purely out of the military. Like, they're only staffing with military people. And I believe the Dutch have one, but I think the Dutch are actually quite competent at cyber. I don't know if their military is any good, but their police are. And certainly their espionage is. So it makes me suspect that their military is possibly punching above their weight, even if it's quite small and doesn't really have a lot of missions. But I don't think that bleeds over. I don't think they're an example for the rest of Europe. I don't think you can say, like, look how good the Dutch are. Obviously, this means that, like, the Spanish, the Italians, the French, the Germans, you know, Poland would be an interesting example, because they've got excellent hackers there as well. And I'm sure that they've got mission, but I've never heard of any cyber force capability that they're trying to set up.
I sort of said that I thought it made sense to start with a SIGINT capability, a cyber espionage capability, and then grow that into an offensive capability. Do you agree, or is that just my sort of indoctrination in the Five Eyes?
That's mentality. That's exactly what I'd expect an ASD weenie to say.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, like, on the one hand, I think you're absolutely right. I think that not necessarily that, like, oh, because SIGINT is the best, but if you're going to build up a skilled team doing something and you have an existing skilled team doing pretty much the same thing, it seems to be incredibly obvious that you go, hey, guys, you know, could we get a hand? You know, if nothing else, like, that's where you want to, you'd want to send the people that you have into that SIGINT agency for, you know, their training courses to get up to speed. At the bare minimum, do the courses that they have on, you know, how to do cyber, how to do analysis, how to do this, how to do R&D, how to do all of the things that exist, because so much of that is going to be completely, you know, it's going to just have straight crossover. And then you can develop out your military doctrine of how we're going to do our thing different than the SIGINT guys do, but you'll at least be building on that base of existing solid capability, understanding, skill.
Yeah.
You know, at this point, cyber is not, it's not new, right? Like, ASD has been doing cyber for 3-4 years now already.
I'm not sure. You know, to be honest, I think the actual public declaration that they did that is not that much older. Yeah, so good. I just wanted to get a sense check to make sure that I'm just not living in a bubble where I've convinced myself that the way to do it is the way to do it.
Yeah, so I think one of the interesting examples here is the UK, because they do have really strong cyber. They've got a GCHQ, which is excellent espionage. They've got a strong civilian, like, they've got, you know, NCC Group is one of the top pen testing companies in the world. You've got, you know, a huge community of very, very capable people, and they're not against the idea of doing cyber for king and country. And yet their military cyber is, you know, from all we've seen, not all that. They recently announced, it was last year, that they were going to set up a new military cyber thing with whatever it was, like 3,000 people.
National Cyber Force, I think it's called.
Right. Yeah, yeah, they're National Cyber Force. And in public, there were people who were... Basically, I've spoken to people who will publicly say, rah, rah, Cyber Force, go UK, cyber capability. And then in private, it's like, yeah, that thing's... I have no idea where they expect to find people. Like, they don't have any organization plan, or, you know, it's just, you know, it's a bit of a shambles. I'm wondering, in a way, if part of this is, it's not just the people who staff it, it's the leadership is an issue, right? So in the US, they've got General Nakasone, who, you know, sort of whipped everything into shape, had a clear vision, took everything forward, and was very obvious that this is someone who is committed to cyber being a thing, and they were driven for it. Who is the German General Nakasone?
So let me try and summarize. We agree that Europe is terrible at military cyber. And, well, there's two big problems I see. One is that they seem to have develop these cyber forces because other people have them,
mm-hmm.
rather than actually having a mission to do them. And so they don't seem to have grown organically. Mm-hmm. Because they haven't grown organically, there's not necessarily a mission for them to do straight away. And so it becomes a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy of you'll have a cyber organization that doesn't achieve anything.
Yeah, I think one of the things on that as well is that if you have a mission, then you can structure the way that you develop your force to do that mission. If you have a vision, even this, like, an idea of what your cyber force is supposed to be doing, the sort of missions it would have, then you know, okay, like, we need to structure it in this way. We need to have, you know, we'll invest more heavily in this than in that. You at least have some idea of what you're trying to build. But if, on the other hand,
I think it gives you a metric that can tell you whether you're improving or not. And without that, it's very hard to know if you're going in the right direction. So if the metric is keeping up with the Dutch. Perhaps they're all succeeding very well. Thanks a lot, Grak.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Talk to you next time.